This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Welcome to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and on today's show, we're going to be talking to Dr. Susan Johnson. Sue Johnson is the director of the Ottawa Couple and Family Institute and the International Center for Excellence in Emotionally Focused Therapy, EFT, as well as a professor of clinical psychology at the University of Ottawa and a research professor at Alliant University in San Diego, California. She's a serious academic. She's a researcher. She's received numerous honors for her work. And we're talking to her today because she's the author of four books, the latest one being Hold Me Tight, Seven Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. And that's what we're going to be talking about, a lifetime of love. So welcome to the show, Sue Johnson.
Hi there, Chip. Happy to be here.
And Ottawa, just in case those of it went by the listeners too fast, is Canada, and we're talking to Sue and Canada. Well, Americans sometimes kind of miss that there are other countries in North America. So
we're that big pink bit on the map between you guys and the Arctic.
We're actually
quite large.
Our northern neighbor, yes. So your work. Let's just start with your work. Your work is concerned with a couples therapy that you call EFT, emotionally focused therapy. Can you kind of summarize what EFT is?
Yeah, well, basically EFT started in the 80s, and it was a response to the fact that most of the ways of helping people in their relationships were about teaching people to negotiate, negotiate better, or teaching them communication skills or insight into the past. And it seemed to me, when I started working with couples, that really wasn't making the kind of changes, those things weren't really making the kind of changes that couples really wanted and needed. You know, couples didn't just want to negotiate better about how much money to put in the savings account. People wanted to be loved. And it seemed like we were sort of missing the mark with all those things. So I started taping couples and working with couples, and we started a research project where we put together an approach which was really based on the idea that love is an emotional bond, and that it really depends on you being able to really respond to each other emotionally and create a safe emotional connection, especially at key moments when people really need that. And in those days, there wasn't much research on what I just said to you. Now there's a whole science of love that's based on the remark I just made. That's got hundreds of studies behind it. But we started working with couples to help them talk about their emotions in different ways, help them understand the signals they sent to each other that kind of got them stuck in really negative patterns. Like the most popular one in North America is one person demands and the other person hears it as an attack and withdraws. And the more that person withdraws, the more the other person demands. And you just spin. You can spin for years in that. And we sort of found ways of helping people have certain conversations that would help people step out of that and step into, and this is even more important, really more open, loving conversations where they could talk about their fears and needs in a way that pulled them close. And what we found when we did research, which, to be honest, shocked me, I knew this seemed to help, but the research results were amazing. They were so good. And now, 20 years later, we've done many studies, and basically we get the best results of any approach to helping couples in North America. Most approaches don't have any research, and our research tells us that we can help 7 out of 10 couples move out of distress to the point where, you know, they can say, no, we're no longer distressed, we're moving towards satisfaction. And the research tells us that those results are pretty stable. It's not like it only lasts, you know, for 6 months. So the results are very positive. And I started thinking that it was really terrible that this research and all this knowledge that we'd learned from working with thousands of couples over the years was all sitting in academic journals. But the people in the public, you know, the public didn't know anything about this. So this started to really drive me crazy, and I thought, well, I'm an academic and I'm a researcher, but I've got to write a book to tell people about the fact that we really do know what love's about now, and we know what goes wrong, and we're getting pretty good at knowing how to fix it.
Yeah, that's
and so
terrific.
I wrote Hold Me Tight.
Now, what underlies this work, or at least sort of some of the basis of this, is a pretty different theory of love than what I read in most books. You're really looking at love out of a phenomenon called attachment, and I'd love for you to talk a little bit about sort of this new way of looking at love.
Yes, it's very powerful, and I think it's really the only real scientific theory of love that we've ever had. And it was only started to... Attachment was put together by a British psychiatrist in... And it's very... I'm British originally, so I think it's God's little joke that a British psychiatrist would find out about love. Okay, I think really whoever... It should be a Californian who finds out about love. But anyway, it was a British psychiatrist, and he started looking... He was asked after World War II to go and talk to widows and to talk to orphans, and he started just really understanding that loneliness can kill you, that we need... Our brains are wired for a certain kind of emotional connection with a few people on the planet. Literally, people who we know we're precious to, who when we call, they'll turn towards us, they'll care for us, that we matter to somebody. And he started realizing that this was universal, and that when people didn't have this, they literally, they got depressed, they got sick, they were much more likely to die. You know, they used to call it failure to thrive.
Mm-hmm.
In the hospitals in America in the 40s and 50s, they used to take these little sick children and put them in sterile rooms and feed them, and they couldn't figure out why they died. Because, you know, from a medical point of view, there was no reason for them to die. So he started studying things like that, and he started understanding, studying mothers and children, and looking at the patterns of behaviors between mothers and children, and the mothers and children that seemed to interact in a way that created loving, safe connection, and the mothers and children who couldn't interact that way, who seemed to create these horrible dances of distancing and or angry interactions. And he started to create a whole beautiful theory of how much we need love and why we need love and the basic emotions in love and how the moves that make up a dance of love. But, you know, this was between mothers and children. And,
right.
You know, it took us an awful long time. It took us until the 90s to suddenly say, hey, wait a minute, you know, adult love's different because, you know, there's a sexual component and it's more mutual. But actually, you know, if you look at a mother and a child, the way they gaze at each other, the way they touch each other, the kind of attention they give each other, the basic emotions that are going backwards and forwards, hey, that's actually not that different from two lovers. You know, and people started applying the same way of thinking, and what they found was that adult lovers are amazingly like these mothers and babies, and that this is, there are bonding behaviors. You can even see it in animals, actually, in mammals anyway, that there's basic bonding behaviors that we have as a species, and that love is not just a sentimental idea or, you know, sort of, what did some researcher say? Oh, it's actually not just frustrated sexuality. You know, you fall in love with somebody because you want to make love with them, but you can't, right? That idea. It's actually about this deep, wired-in need that's all about survival, to know that you matter to somebody. You know, I talk in the book about the basic questions are behind ARE conversations. ARE conversations they're about, are you there for me? And I talk about how in most arguments, really important arguments, everyone has disagreements, but in the arguments that really sort of shape a relationship, if you really listen, people say, oh, well, we're arguing about sex or money or the kids. If you really listen, they're not arguing about that. They're arguing because somebody's calling, are you there for me? Do I matter to you? Will you come close when I call? Can I depend on you? And the answer is, well, no, or maybe.
Yeah.
That's what's happening in the relationship.
I wrote an article, actually, I think it's on my website, where I decided that almost every conversation between two people who love each other can be deconstructed to, do you love me? Do you love me still? Do you get that I love you? Is my love
That's
being
right.
received? That really all the conversation are all ways to reassure ourselves of that fundamental bond.
Well, I think you're right. And I think the basic layer is that the quality of the connection, the process of connection, you know, and the trouble is we're not used to paying attention to that.
Right.
So we actually do think that we're just having an argument about money.
Right.
And we sort of don't tune into that other level.
Right.
What Bowlby said is that's the level that matters. So you either create a safe haven and a secure bond with each other, which helps you grow as people. And one of the most revolutionary things he said is that love like that makes you stronger and more independent. It doesn't turn you into a sort of wimp. You know, I think one of the reasons we've taken so long to listen to his wisdom is that we have this idea that human beings, adults are supposed to be self-sufficient. You know, well, I don't think so. There's no evidence in psychology that that well-functioning adults are self-sufficient. In fact, most of the evidence in psychology says that well-functioning adults are the people who feel okay about trusting other people and depending on them, and that when they need other people, they can turn to them and get support. You know, that's strength.
Let's pause on that moment here because I want to take a short break to support our sponsors. Listeners, I'd really encourage you to listen to these ads. The ads are created by my sponsors for my show. There's lots of really good products. Also, there's often really good offers, percentages off. You can get a wonderful deal for audio materials at audible.com. There's sex toys and products at Adam and Eve. All kinds of good deals. So please, would you listen to the sponsors and then come on back because we have a lot more to talk about. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Sex, Tantra, and Kama Sutra, a weekly internet audio program from PersonalLifeMedia.com. Learn ancient secrets that turn on the soul of sex at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August. We're talking to Dr. Sue Johnson. She's the author of a particularly nice book that I like called Hold Me Tight, 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. We were when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about sort of the theory, the underlying theory of love. The thing that I was struck with as I was reading all that was just that if we're biologically programmed to love and to need love, why doesn't love stay? Why doesn't it last? Why does it go away? Why do we give it up so easily?
Well, I think one of the things is we haven't understood it at all. We've just considered it, you know, almost kind of a sideline in life. You know, we've considered it that, you know, it was just sort of about sexuality, and it was bound to disappear. You know, the idea that love is sort of a fever, mm-hmm. and you fall in love, and then it just disappears, right? Everyone knows that, and then you get on with the business of living. And so we've had some very funny ideas about love that haven't helped us at all pay attention to it in the right way and nurture it in the right way. But I think also, when you don't understand something, you know, love is a sort of dance, and there are moments in any dance when you step on somebody's toes, when you turn, you miss each other, you're not tuned in, and just when you want the person to turn towards you, they turn away. There are moments like that in any dance, and I think when we don't understand the dance we're caught up in, we can start to really lose that real sense of safe connection with each other. And there's only so many ways we can deal with that. This is the strength of this theory. It sort of tells you what goes wrong and how it goes wrong. You know, really, we're not terribly diverse when you think of love. We've only got a few moves. There's only a few moves in this dance. You know, if when I'm feeling disconnected from you and suddenly you're not kind of with me, we're not moving to the same music, I feel safe enough that I can turn to you and say, hey, Chip, you know, somehow I'm feeling disconnected. Maybe I'm feeling a little lonely. Where are you? I want you to come and connect with me. I want you to come and be with me. And you can respond and say, oh, Sue, I didn't know you were feeling that way. Come here. Let me hold your hand, give you a hug. That's a really positive relationship. Mm-hmm. People can reach for each other. They can reconnect when they find this sort of space between them. And in that relationship, we know from research that if you have that relationship, you're more able to assert yourself. You're more able to talk about what you need. You're going to have a better sex life. You're more able to confide. Your relationship is going to support you out in the world so that you're less likely to be overwhelmed by stress. I mean, there's all kinds of incredible things that spin out from the quality of those interactions I'm talking to you now. If you can't do that, if you really miss each other and the other person starts to feel like the enemy and you start protecting yourself, we move into, there's only two other things to do. We move into, I don't know what to do. This is a bit scary. I'm feeling off balance. I think you're mad at me. So what I'm going to do is shut down and move away. And wait for you to stop being mad.
Right.
The trouble with that one is I shut down, I shut you out. And we have a very hard time sometimes seeing the impact we have on other people in these hot interactions. You know, we're caught up in all kinds of emotion. We move our feet to deal with that emotion. We don't see that when we move our feet, we don't see the look of horror on the other person's face. You know, we're not... So when we shut down, we shut the other person out. That makes them anxious. Bowlby says, when we can't connect with our partner, our brain goes into a kind of panic, right? That makes mm-hmm. us anxious. Mm-hmm. And the other way of dealing with it, which is pretty negative, is to get freaked out and say, I'll make you respond to me. I'll criticize you. I'll demand. I'll say, you know, why don't you talk to me more?
Right.
You never talk to me. You know, I can remember when you used to talk to me, but now... And, of course, the terrible thing about that one is that actually the person who's saying that, the hidden message is, won't you come and be with me, won't you come and be with me? Unfortunately, the other person hears, I'm dangerous, I'm going to be critical of you, and the other person moves away.
Right.
So we get stuck. We get stuck in what I call demon dialogues. The most popular one of all, which in the research says leads very predictably to divorce, is that you have two people losing the connection between them, and one person starts protesting and complaining. Unfortunately, they don't usually say, gee, I'm feeling so lonely, where are you? I'd really like to be closer. They say things like, we never go out anymore, and how come you don't? Right. So one person starts protesting and complaining, the other person moves away, says, oh, I can't deal with this. I don't know what to say. I can never please her. Moves away and shuts down. The more he moves away and shuts down, the angrier she gets, the more she demands. And what they're demanding, what they're doing sort of almost becomes hidden. The game, you know, they start to focus on the ball running between them, and they lose total sense of the game. The demon dialogue takes over their relationship and creates more and more distance, to the point where they don't feel safe with each other anymore. And, you know, then that's when you hear people say things like, oh, well, you know, that's just the way marriage is, you know, after 3 or 4 years with the kids and, you know, with chores, you know, we don't talk anymore, and, you know, when we do talk, we fight, and that's the way marriage is. When you listen to them, they'll describe this kind of demon dialogue. And people just sort of think, well, this is the way it is. It's not the way it is. It's what happens when you don't know how to create this safe emotional connection and take care of it.
And your seven conversations kind of start there. You start with really noticing these demon dialogues, really seeing them for what they are, naming them, and just starting to learn how to speak the conversation that they're masking.
That's right. And, you know, it's really amazing when people start to realize that that the partner isn't the enemy. You know, mm-hmm. that the partner isn't desperately trying to hurt their feelings or totally cold and uncaring. You know, the partner is hurting just as much as they are. And both of them are caught up in this terrible dance. People have different words for it. One couple I'm working with, they call it the nothing. Because it leaves them nothing to hold on to. There's nothing between them. And the way it goes is, she gets upset and starts to seize, and she withdraws. She stops talking to him. She goes away. Now, they've been doing this for 30 years, you understand. Mm-hmm. She goes away. And he picks up the tension, and he gets really freaked by it, right? He knows she's not talking to him. So he goes and he says to her, what's wrong? And she says, because she's quite intimidated by him, she's quite unsure of herself, she doesn't know what to say, she doesn't really understand what's going on with her, so she says, nothing.
Right.
And he says, what are you talking about? Why won't you talk to me? And he gets stronger and bigger and heavier and more critical, and she hears, oh my God, I can't please this man, I just want to run away from here. So she says, nothing, nothing. Then they get totally frustrated, and they don't talk to each other for days.
Mm-hmm.
So they call it the nothing. And when they can start to understand how the nothing has actually taken over their relationship at various times for 30 years and really destroyed a lot of their love and trust for each other, they can come together and start realizing that it's this pattern, this demon dialogue. Now, I deliberately called it a demon. A demon sort of comes in, it's a big black thing, and it comes in and it takes you over, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a demon dialogue that comes in and takes them over. The trouble with it is, it's not just painful when it's happening. It destroys people's sense of safety and connection with their partner, so that then when they do really need something, you know, and they do really need comfort and security, they have a very hard time turning to their partner and asking for it. So that's also why we call it a demon, because it sort of destroys the good parts of the relationship. Yeah.
And then from that place, you have couples find the raw spots, go back and look at moments when they couldn't connect and rethink and retalk through those moments. And you kind of lead people through a whole sequence.
Yes. And we lead them to a key conversation. The conversation we did from our years of research, we realized that in EF, when we're doing EFT, you know, we would see people be able to have the, not just step out of the negative conversations, but start to be able to have these very positive conversations. And we would see that when they could do this and create this emotional responsiveness with each other, that they would get better, and that they would be better years later when we tested them at follow-up. So we started to understand how important these conversations are, and they're really bonding conversations. You know, they're conversations where once you have been able to step out of the demon dialogue and create this safe place to stand in your relationship, once you really understand, you know, that your partner isn't the enemy, people are able to turn and talk about the fears that they have, because, you know, in a love relationship, we're vulnerable. There's no way around that. Even Freud said, to love is to be vulnerable, okay? So people start to be able to turn and confide the fears they have and ask for the what they need to feel really safe and connected from their partner. And when you can do it that way, it's actually, people find it incredibly rewarding.
Yeah.
People like to be needed. They like to, once they know what the other person needs from them and they don't get anxious, they can say, well, you know, of course, I love it when you turn and ask me, say, you're so important to me, I just want you to hold me for a minute because I'm anxious about tomorrow. People like it. So people start to be able to talk about their needs in a whole new way and reach for each other and pull each other close. And when they can do that, all kinds of things just fall into place. They're able to talk about their sexuality differently. They're able to look at injuries that have happened in the relationship and create forgiveness. You know, it's once you can have that kind of bonding conversation, you can reach for each other, you know you can do that, I think the relationship is really on a whole new footing. You know,
that's, yeah, well, you're back to, you've established real love in the definition of love, that is that attachment and that connection and that real heart-to-heart meaning.
That is.
We need to pause for a moment here. So we're going to take a short break. On this break, listeners, I just want to remind you, if you just heard something Sue said or I said that you thought, wow, I got to send that to my husband or I got to send that to my wife. We do put up transcripts of most of the shows, and so if you go to the episode pages, Sex, Love, and Intimacy at personallifemedia.com, if you go to my episode pages, you will find this episode and a transcript, and why cut and paste a piece and send it to somebody and start a conversation. Also, this is a great link to send to people. Pretty much everybody I know is looking to really learn about love and have more love in their life. So if you're getting value out of this conversation, please send the link to people who might be interested. It's the way my show grows, and we're kind of happy to provide the service. Don't forget that when we come back, Dr. Johnson has an exercise for you to try at home. But right now, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. We'll be right back.
Listen to Expanded Lovemaking, a weekly internet audio program and podcast for men and women on Personal Life Media. Get advanced techniques that expand your lovemaking bliss.
Welcome back to Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I'm your host, Chip August, and we're talking to Susan Johnson. Sue Johnson is the author of Hold Me Tight, 7 Conversations for a Lifetime of Love. When we left, we were kind of talking about these conversations and where they lead. And I need to ask this just because I'm a guy, and emotionally focused therapy, as soon as I see the word emotionally focused, there's a part of me that wonders, wait, man, isn't this really a woman thing, you know, as a man?
No, Chip. No, it's not. You know what? We do emotionally focused with vets. We work with the U.S. Army, with people who have come back from Iraq. We do emotionally focused with the Firemen of New York. In fact, my work has been used a lot with couples who are facing trauma. That's one of my specialties. I mean, we do emotionally focused with, not just with guys, and guys really like it because we teach them the logic of their emotions. We teach them, you know, what their partners do need and what they need, and we empower them to talk about their emotions we help them understand what love's about, which is what they really want. You know, they want a manual, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we sort of give them one. But also we work with guys who, for their job, in their job, they have to really be able to shut down emotion in order to, you know, you can't be deep in your emotions when you're fighting a fire.
Right.
But so they have to be able to do that for their job. The trouble is if they try to live their whole lives in that shutdown state, nobody can, you know, they're all alone and, you know, they get overwhelmed by stress and all kinds of bad things happen. So our experience and also the research says that men like this approach. I think they like it because it's really focusing on people's experience. It's you don't have to learn all kinds of communication skills and then try to put them into you know, place when you don't feel like doing communication skills. And you know, men like the sort of concreteness of it. And our research says that we are actually very successful with men who their wives call inexpressive. Okay, we mm-hmm. don't have any problem. You know, we do this with truckers, mm-hmm. and we do this with intelligence officers in the U.S. Army and with enlisted men. But it's just the word emotion that freaks guys out.
just a little bit. Now, you know, I lead workshops in sex, love, and intimacy. It doesn't really freak me out, but I'm a guy, and I am sensitive to the feeling that women tell me I don't really understand emotion. You know, it's not really what's so. The thing I was struck by, men, it's not that men don't want to have sex. Most men certainly have, you know, being human is to be sexual, you know, but I just noticed that what your book gave was space to really talk about and be present to, the part of sex, which really is about being held and taking the barriers away from between us. It's really about that cocoon space that we create for each other that's precious, that most men don't have words for.
Yes, and I think that's a very good point. And I think one of the saddest things that happens in relationships is that the only way men usually know how to ask for that kind of connection, comfort, closeness, touch, is to ask to make love.
Right.
And unfortunately, when people aren't feeling really safe and connected, the woman hears, I want an orgasm.
Right.
I want the sexual experience. But in fact, often what the man is trying, you know, men have been telling me for 30 years, I don't just want an orgasm, I want to feel desired,
right.
I want to feel held, I want to feel close. But I don't know how to ask for those things, and those things seem kind of wimpy. You know,
right.
Our society has actually taught us we're not supposed to have these attachment needs for closeness and connection and reassurance. You know, people feel ashamed of them, especially
yes.
men. We're not supposed to have them. They're the most natural things in the world. They're a source of strength. But guys don't know how to ask for those, so they say, let's make love. And, you know, the woman says, you just want to screw.
Right.
And it's an incredible... It's disconnect. It's awful. So, yeah, you know, we help men talk about that, and I say things like, you know what, if I was a man in North America who never got touched, unless I go and play rugby when guys are slamming into me as fast
mm-hmm.
as they can, or
mm-hmm.
you guys call it football, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Rugby, you know, football, hockey, basketball,
yeah.
They all have that quality.
That's right, but if you take that away... Where in our society do men get touched, you know, stroked, held, connected with on that kind of physical level? Only one place. It's in bed with a woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, women touch each other more. You know, women even touch their children more. But I think, and there is a piece in the book on sex. You know, I talk about three kinds of sex and how if you understand love, suddenly you look at sex in a whole different light. You know, that sex is not just about procreation, and it's not just about lust.
Right.
You know, James Bond is, you know, that's like one-dimensional sex. You know, that's...
Even the latest James Bond, you know, one of the things you talk about is solace sex. The name of the latest James Bond is Quantum of Solace. And even he, it turns out, has feelings and needs and
no.
desires. Yeah,
Based
yeah. So,
having feelings, what is the world
yeah,
coming
yeah.
to?
Yeah, yeah. So, No, that I when you were saying about how men are, I have to say one of the things I really love about the time that I live in is that more and more my male friends and I, we hug. You know, it's nothing for us to put an arm around each other. It's that fortunately the loudest taboos about men just being brothers with each other is evaporating, and it is better than it's ever been before. You see this, you see this on the football field, they hug each other. You know, you see this in rugby, they hug each other. So
And ironically, of course, you also see it with the army guys.
Yep.
And because, you know, when you faced an incoming missile
yep.
together or watched one of your buddies die, no matter how much macho training you've been given, the pure humanness comes
yeah.
to the fore, and you hold each other, right?
Yeah.
You hang on and you hold each other and you comfort each other. And one of the problems in military marriages is that often these guys feel, you know, they face the dragon together and they feel more
right.
connected to their buddies. Then they
right.
come home and they're totally different than when they left, and they meet this lady who looks like a stranger to them, and she's their wife.
Yeah.
You know, and she doesn't even, they don't even know how to translate
yeah.
what they've been through in the last year into this, you know, into being with this woman, right? And we really need to help them there. It's a real, I mean, I think it's really important to help our soldiers hang on to their families and create families and relationships where they can heal.
Yeah.
From the stuff that they've been through.
You are wonderful to talk to, and we could just go on and on and on and on and on, but we're starting to run out of time here. If my listeners wanted to get your book or get in touch with you, what's the best way?
Oh, well, it's easy to get the book. The easiest way is just get it on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that's very easy to get. And you can look on there's lots of resources on the website, which is www.holdmetight.net.
Mm-hmm.
You can go on and you can watch me talking. You can find all kinds of things on that website. And you can also get to me through the International Center. And the email there, if you'd like it, is OCFI, Ottawa Couple and Family Institute, OCFI@magma.ca. And that CA is for Canada, and that's in up there, up here in the ice and snow, where it's now about 30 below, and I heard that it's going down to 45 tomorrow.
I'm so sorry. I don't know if I should tell you this or not, but I'm sitting in Northern California where it's about 55 degrees or so.
No, I'm not interested. Thank you. Although I must say, I do come to California a lot, and you live in a very, very beautiful part of the world.
I'm very blessed.
Listeners,
we will put those links on the website. So if you visit the website, you can find links to Dr. Johnson's work here. I like to leave my listeners with an exercise or something they can do at home that could increase the love or intimacy or sexuality in their life. You got anything in mind?
Well, there's lots of exercises in the book in Hold Me Tight. But I guess maybe one thing that I suggest that people could do is that sometimes we totally leave this dimension of closeness and bonding out of our relationships altogether. We get so caught up in, you know, being a team around our kids,
mm-hmm.
or that we just forget to put it in altogether. And what I try to do is get people to think about, and maybe think about not just the negative patterns they get caught into, but maybe sit down and share with each other the last time that they felt really close, and when they were able to turn to their partner and ask their partner for what they needed, and their partner responded in a way that helped them feel whole and strong and important and precious, and really tell their partner what their partner did that helped them feel that way, so that, you know, sometimes we need to know the negative impacts we have on our partner, but we also really need to know the huge positive impact we can have on our partner.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we miss that. You know, it's so I encourage people to do that and to think about a time when, you know, they were able to ask for what they needed and their partner really came in and was really there for them, and all the wonderful things that came out of that, you know. So then I think people start to understand how precious they are to their spouse and how much they have to give. You know, guys, we were talking about guys. Guys say, oh, she needs me to problem solve. She needs me to go out and, you know, solve this problem and solve that problem. And the ironic thing is, that's not what their wife needs. Their wife just needs them.
Right.
Their wife needs their presence
and attention, and
wife needs them to turn and say, "Hi, sweetie, I think you're doing well. You know, you're the person I want to be with. You're precious to me. And if you're going through a hard time, you're strong enough." That's what the wife needs, not for the guy to say, "I'm going to go in and solve this problem for you." You know, and so anyway. It was very fun to talk to you.
And great fun to talk to you. That sounds like a great exercise. I think you just gave a lot of couples a very sweet moment to share with each other. Thanks for coming on the show. You've been
very
informative.
Welcome.
And listeners, thank you for listening in again. This brings us to the end of another episode of Sex, Love, and Intimacy. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you'll join us again.
Okay, thank you.
That is it.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.